This is the Bookable Japan Minicast. Hi, I'm Ben Mabley with a special Football Japan Minicast on Friday the 1st of June. I've just got back to Osaka from Tokyo, where a couple of days ago I was joined by a pair of special guests to discuss all manner of things, ranging from Shinji Kagawa's imminent transfer to the surprise names at the top of the J-League and crisis at Gamba Osaka. Hope you enjoy the show. Okay, well, joining me very kindly for the third in our series of special minicasts, a friend of the show, a hat-trick of appearances now for Sean Carroll from the Daily Yomiuri and Shukan Saka magazine. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
How are you doing?
This is my hat-trick.
It is your hat-trick.
I'm the only person to be on.
You're the only person to be on three times. Well, except for me, we've been on like 183
times.
Does
he
have to take the recorder home? Yeah, you get to set the recorder home, and I had to buy a new one after this. You get it engraved, you keep it.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'll try not to drop it off the bus on the open top
celebration. Yeah, please don't dent it, because you do get charged for any dents that go into it. And also, back by popular demand, and by no means just because we happen to be in the same place at the same time, it's Cesare Polenghi, the managing editor for Asia for Goal.com. Welcome back.
Hi, chaps.
You've been in Singapore for the last couple of
months. Yeah, actually, I've been for 2 months in Singapore. I must say, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Though, I do miss Japan a bit.
You've still been following the J-League a little bit, right?
You've got things to say for us today. You know, we got a very nice streaming on there, so we can watch on the internet all the games. Actually, I probably watched more games in Singapore than I did when I was here.
Mm. Well, that's good. So, you know plenty about things like, you know, Mr. Shinji Kagawa, for example, who's been a little bit in the news on top story on your website the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I was discussing this with, you know, some of my colleagues out in Singapore, and I was trying to explain that if this happens, the moment Shinji Kagawa signs the contract with Man United, it's going to be the greatest moment in the history of Japanese football.
Well, let's just clarify. It looks like they're going to reach an agreement between United and Manchester United and Borussia Dortmund. United offered 15 million euros. Dortmund wanted 20, they're going to come to some kind of compromise. Although we understand that no personal terms have been decided yet. Kagawa's in Japan.
It's kind of written in the stars, right? I mean, Fagi, which is Ferguson in Japanese, went all the way to watch him play in the final. They got then
the day before the Premier League's climax. He was in.
Right.
He was in Germany for that.
Well, at least he saw something good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kagawa went to Manchester. Mm-hmm. They met, they talked with an interpreter, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it really seems it's going to happen. It's just the point that it's just a matter of details.
Yeah.
A couple of millions, more or less. And, you know, some clauses in the contract. But
just now, it's the biggest, well, certainly, surely, the biggest transfer for a Japanese player ever.
A Japanese player in many. The Japanese have been very happy and proud that a guy who played in the J-League actually played for, you know, then in Man United.
And Park Ji-sung.
Park Ji-sung. So, you know, like now they got a real Japanese kid, a 23 years old Japanese kid playing for Man U.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. It's the ultimate achievement, I think, for Japanese football so far.
Sean, like me, you're British. Are you excited about the prospect of this move?
Yes. And no.
I see that since there's a no. Why no?
Well, I agree with what you say, that it's going to be the biggest thing for Japanese football. But whenever any player moves anywhere in Europe, they suddenly become this figure. And to move to Man United has broken a lot of big players. Think of someone like Veron, who was a fantastic player. Mm. And moving there, and the amount of pressure that you get from the Japanese media side. I read an article today in one of the English newspapers that was kind of saying, this kind of shows what level United are at now. They have to kind of pick up slightly cheaper players who haven't really established, and that is still kind of, I don't particularly agree with the whole thrust of it, but seeing how it's viewed outside of Japan compared to the hysteria that's going to go on once he's signed in Japan, he's got to learn to deal with both sides of that, with people in England thinking, who are you, United have dropped down, to people in Japan saying, you know, they expect him to be scoring 15-20 goals in the Premier League to be player of the year. And
for me, the point is, like, you know, as a player, I do trust him. I mean, I think he can play in Man U now. He's just quick enough. He's intelligent. I mean, Smalling was playing for Man United, so
sure.
I think Kagawa can play too. What I think the point is just, you know, I'm really concerned, as before I was saying, that, you know, I can need an interpreter. You know, we know there's been 2 years in Germany, doesn't speak much German, doesn't speak English. He needs to grow up a little bit as a boy, I think. Sure. You know, he needs to just, you know, start to understand that, you know, like, he needs to learn the language, he needs to, you know, every time you see Kagawa on TV in Japan, you know, with his friends, they're in a restaurant, in a Japanese restaurant, somewhere in Germany. You know,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah, sure.
So I think that he needs to make the grade there. You met Miyaichi and spoke with him in English, you know. It seems like one of the reasons why he seems like the first Japanese player so far who's doing fine in England is because it seems that he already, something snapped already. The boy is on his way. Now, I don't have the same feeling about Kagawa, though Kagawa is a fantastic player, of course, he can definitely play in the Premier League, I think. He can play in Man U. So, for me, that's a question mark. I mean, after the first game, when, you know, like, they're going to throw microphones at him and there's going to be not an interpreter, he's going to be okay, comfortable, and what's Fergie going to tell him, you know, what when Rio Ferdinand starts yelling at him in English, you know, like during the game, you know, these sort of things. That's the thing I
have. Well, he's going to have Park to help him. Park speaks Japanese.
Ah, oh, dear.
If Park stays.
Well, I think he's going to stay.
Although the United commercial director, I saw a quote with him today, Richard Arnold, who's saying this is definitely not just about selling shirts. I was glad that he clarified that.
Yeah, I don't think
anyone
thought it was until he said that.
Now
maybe it is about selling shirts. But no. Do you think Miyaichi, in part, the fact he was never within the bubble of the J-League and that whole kind of closed society that makes it up has helped him in that respect?
Absolutely.
He went straight from school into the professional game.
Undoubtedly.
He hasn't come through with all the agents, all the people telling him to do this, and like the president, the club coach is saying, no. He's going to have to avoid that and say, no, this is...
He also skipped the the J-League course. I don't know if you heard that, but when you become a J-Leaguer, you have to go for 2-3 days in a camp.
Yeah.
And they tell you exactly how to answer interviews.
ガンバリタイと思います.
Yeah. You know, and I got...
Basically,
you know,
the stock quotes that you get.
Essentially
mean nothing, the platitudes.
I know two players who actually went there. I mean, I can't tell their names, but they're twins and half Irish. And they went, you know, like, for this course, and, you know, I actually spoke with their brother, who told me that it was beats my imagination, okay?
Yeah.
You basically are told exactly, and there's a sort of manual that tells you how to answer the questions, and, you know, things, which is very unexpected.
Okay, Kagawa's gone through that, but then maybe they can give him a manual of how to answer things in cliches in English, I don't know. Well, on the playing side, I think in United's case, if they're playing the system that they play in Europe, I know Sean's not a huge fan of tactics, I don't plan to dwell on this for too much, but if you're playing with basically one up top and three attacking midfielders behind, and that's kind of the system he's been used to at Dortmund, and he can throw from the centre. But if they're playing 4-4-2, like United have played in the Premier League for much of last season, then maybe it's difficult. Do you play him slightly with drawn striker, or does he get stuck out on the left of midfield? Or
just numbers, Ben. It's just numbers.
He's just
got to play with passion. He's got to pay for the shirt.
There is a
difference. Give it 110%.
Yeah.
If the variation of formation, okay, already shuts you off, it just sort of means you're a mediocre player to a certain extent. I mean, if you're a good player, you should be able to fit in more or less.
Well, the thing that excites me about the Kagawa move is that he does offer a certain amount of options. I mean, Ferguson rarely uses the same lineup twice in a row. He can play in different positions. He might like to play just behind the striker in the centre, but he can do a lot of things. I don't know.
That's what I was going to say to you. Like, that's another thing. He's gone from Dortmund to being one of the first names on the team sheet.
Yeah.
And at United, it won't be.
Yeah.
For me, I think of him as playing in kind of the same position that Rooney plays. Sure. And I know they've got rid of Berbatov and Owen, so they're probably going to bring in a main striker. So you'd assume that he might play the main striker, but he might drop in which case Kagawa is not going to take him out of the team.
No.
So this first season might be a case of he might get 10 appearances coming on in the last 10-15 minutes when they change it around. So
then if you've got Rooney behind a main striker, you can have Kagawa on the left, I suppose.
You can have on the left or right, but you've got Nani, you've got Valencia, he's got good players to get past.
Four competitions, and also, honestly, if they're going to pay him like 17 or 22 millions, I don't think it's going to be to play only 10 games.
No,
it might have
Anderson, right?
Yeah, I think Kagawa is.
United sign every player for 18 million now.
Yeah, this is true. But I mean, the obvious comparison at the moment is Eden Hazard, who's going to Chelsea by the looks of things.
Yeah, who's that guy? He's just a really.
But I mean, there's so much hype about his move because there's so much huge amount of money involved. Obviously, Abramovich is behind it.
And he uses Twitter,
which helps all of us. But I mean, is he really better than Kagawa? I'm not sure that I'd be more excited if I was a United fan.
Just to mention one thing about Kagawa, the Here he moved to the Bundesliga. In the first half of the season, he was voted as the best player in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Then he got injured.
Yeah.
So, you think if Hazard goes to the Bundesliga, and, you know, like, he can be the best player after, you know, in the first 6 months?
Maybe, but this is Kagawa 2 years ago.
I hope now it's even better.
Yeah, like, you'd expect so.
Right.
Well, this is what I said about the article that was written about saying that United have kind of dropped their... That was the thing I thought. Well, Hazard was, I think, almost twice as much as they're reporting they're going to pay for Kagawa.
Yeah.
Kagawa's won 2 Bundesligas in a row. He scored, I don't know how many goals, but he scored a lot of goals.
He was 13 league goals this season, and then
Hazard's 10 assists on the
Hazard, I've never seen him play really. I've obviously heard a lot about him, and it sounds like he's a very good player, but he hasn't won the French league. He hasn't.
I've seen him play in a few French games, and yeah, he looks an excellent player for the French league. But I mean, what does that mean necessarily? At the international level, he's got a...
Joe Cole was an excellent player.
Right, and at the international level, I don't know if he's even scored yet. Maybe he scored one recently, I don't know. But he certainly went a lot of games for Belgium, a very underperforming Belgian team that hasn't done anything. And,
this is where you get an interesting split, though. People always complain about clubs like Manchester City and Real Madrid and Chelsea that spend loads of money and buy players and they go, oh, it's not fair, they're out, you know, they're ruining the market.
Yeah.
And then when a club like United tries to avoid getting drawn into that and saying, if you're going to offer $32 million for Hazard, he's not really proven, he's 21.
Sure.
No, we'll buy this guy for half the price who's done more.
Yeah.
They get criticised there and say they're lacking ambition. Yeah, is this, well, which...
I think that's just an obsession with figures. I mean, look at Newcastle last season with Cabaye and Chiotto in midfield and they cost, what, $5 million each or something. Anyway, Kagawa, he did score for Japan when he came back to the country in the friendly with Azerbaijan last week. A good goal, a not particularly important game. But Japan have got now 3 World Cup qualifiers coming up, 2 at home and to Oman and to Jordan, then a trip to Australia. We covered the World Cup qualifiers a little bit when I spoke to you last, so we'll skip over this a little bit briefly. But anything to worry about, really, for Japan in the next few weeks when we've got...
I just want Honda to be in, you know, healthy.
Yeah.
I want, you know, because I think that, you know, like, the team in Japan becomes fantastic when Honda's in. I mean, I'm not saying he's the best player or everything, but there's something about his presence, about him being in the midfield over there. I mean, and that clearly gives the team another dimension. I mean, more or less 1 year ago, I was at the game in Sapporo when they played against Korea.
Yeah.
And though it was a friendly, I don't know if you can call a Japan-Korean game a friendly, he was amazing.
Yeah.
And then he got injured. And the next game, so you always had the feeling that there's something missing. It's just, there's something about Honda that, you know, it's, the other players always work very hard.
Yeah.
Just like Japan worked very hard in the, you know, in the 90s, you know, like Kazu and Gon and the team. But there's something about Honda that gives them like a, you know, like a, push them to another dimension, I think. And, you know, like, when he is in good shape, when Kagawa is there, when Okazaki is in good shape, you know, like, and you have all those other quality players around, I think Japan is a very competitive team. So
Japan do have this problem that when they play at home to teams that they're expected to beat easily, they struggle against packed defences and the like. But I suppose Honda has just made his comeback for Japan in that friendly. He's got these 2 games to warm up in before they go to the big one in Australia.
Looking Which forward. Is not in Asia.
Which is not in Asia, which is what we went through in the last podcast. Did you ever get any messages of complaints?
It was all spoken in jest.
I've
got friends who are Australian.
Mm.
I sound like Sepp.
You do sound a bit like Sepp.
No, I agree. Yeah, with Honda, I think there's 2 things. In the last World Cup, he kind of suddenly burst, not really burst on the scene, but I think people outside Japan certainly, and within Japan, he was kind of the next big thing, and he fulfilled that potential. But I think now, we just spoke about Kagawa a lot, and there are other players as well. It's not just him.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've got him, and I don't know if it means anything, he could have just done it to get a bit of attention so he can snap at the media who asked him about it, but the fact he's got number 4, you do wonder if he's going to drop deeper so he can conduct things from the middle, and then with the likes of maybe Miyachi, with Kagawa, with Okazaki, with Hafanar, with Lee up front, the dependence isn't going to be on Honda to make the chances, to finish the chances.
Yeah.
He's going to be able to drop, and like you said, he's got this kind of aura that does get the rest of the players moving. It does make them think, hang on, we've got to really... And after one game, I think it was the Tajikistan game that they won 8-0, was it?
Yeah, in Osaka.
He was talking after that in the mix zone. And it was like, that was like the last game of the season. Even the European players, it was kind of like, now they've got a break. And it was around about the end of the season, because he was talking about the fact that now the players have to keep working. that now we've got a break.
Yeah.
But it can't be a break. We have to keep training. And he singled out Yoshida, Maya.
Yeah.
And said, like, for him especially, like, he can't just relax now and take a holiday.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he was very serious, very kind of, you know, everyone else was kind of happy and relaxed. Yeah. He'd been 8-0. And he had this kind of drive, and you sensed it then. Like, and if he's always like that with the players, it must rub off, and it must make them really kind of knuckle down and really, you know, like you said, it rubs off and it gets them putting in that extra bit that maybe if you've got Kashiwagi in there or someone, you don't have that same thing.
Sure. Excellent. Well, I'm sure we're all looking forward to these games. Anyway, we'll have a little bit of a musical interlude now and come back and talk about the J-League season so far.
Wait, why do people do this? Why do you have a musical interlude?
Okay, well, there's no real summer break this season, but there's 3 weeks off now for the World Cup qualifiers, and we are pretty well exactly a third of the way through, so it's as good a time as any to stop and reflect on what's been going on so far. Start with the good. Vigata Sendai, top of the league after 13 matches. Sean, have you been impressed with them?
I haven't seen them yet.
You haven't seen them yet?
I told you the other day. I've seen every single J1 in the league. I've seen them in the cup once against Kawasaki.
I'm like, many apologies.
They're the only team I haven't seen live yet, I think, in the stadium. But in terms of their results and what I've seen on TV, and it's unbelievable because I tipped them to be much, much, much further down. I thought the momentum would kind of wear off and they drop kind of back to their level of being a decent-ish side. But
they were fourth place last season, but the top three were miles ahead, and they were kind of, and Sendai were kind of ahead of a really close middle pack.
I don't know, like 2 years ago, they were very good for like 7-8 games.
Yeah.
And last year were very good for almost half of the season.
Yeah.
And now, this year, are they going to bring it all the way to the end?
What is the thing? They are top.
Actually, sorry, I didn't see them play. I went to when they played against Cerezo. Osaka.
Yeah.
And they looked like a very solid team.
They do.
They looked a bit almost like an Italian team.
Don't say that. They're ruined.
I think that discredits them a little bit.
Yeah. So you're suggesting they're paying referees to get these results. Is that what you're suggesting?
Allegedly. Yeah.
That, you know, don't give up. You know, don't show off your ignorance. If nobody has paid any referee. It's a bit. Okay.
Anyways.
We have a podcast.
Yeah.
They don't phone the referee. Oh, they call the referees, or they speak to them. Definitely. I'm sure that I've heard audio of them speaking to referees.
Sendai have brought in.
Not Sendai.
I appreciate some
Italians it. Allegedly.
Yeah, I'm just bringing us back to the game. From what I've seen them play, they brought in a forward called Wilson from Brazil. And I don't think he's the best player in the world by any means, but he dovetails extremely well with Shingo Akamine, who scored 13 goals for them last season, but no one else was scoring.
That's a good point. A lot of the Brazilian players who are great in Japan are by no means the best players in the world.
No, but
for some reason they fit.
Well, sometimes they fit and sometimes they don't, but I think in Sendai's case, they needed someone who could dovetail because last season they were entirely reliant on Akimina for goals, and now they work really well together, and they both work really hard. They come to the flanks, they drop back into midfield, they help out in a defensive manner as well.
Doesn't he fall over a lot? Whenever I hear his name, I think of Tom Hanks.
Do you?
And Castaway.
Okay.
Because he befriends a volleyball. It's made by a certain brand of sporting goods, and there's a bit where he becomes friends with him, and they build up this relationship, and then the ball gets swept away on the tide, and he yells out 2 or 3 times, "Wilson!" Because the ball is the brand,
right?
And every time I hear this guy's name, I get this scene playing in my head.
Ah, I see.
So maybe I need to go and watch them.
You do need to hurry up and go watch them and
to replace that image with the actual guy.
Replace it or justify it.
Or I might find myself yelling it out in the mix zone.
You might do. It might rob you of your press pass forever. Probably
Italian hate. Yeah,
this we're getting very tangential.
Right, but we said before Sendai that like two seasons ago they were good.
We're sorry, Ben.
No, this is fine.
His body's been mad in a while. You know?
I know we haven't. It's great to see you guys too.
But go off one more time.
No, we're all right. We're all right. Sendai, you said before they were good for 8 or 9 games in the season. This season they've started off really well. They've been 5 points clear a couple of times, being pegged back. But in May they played 5 league games and only won once. Admittedly, that was 4-0 against Nagoya. So they haven't got massive consistency. You could say just below them, Sanfrecce Hiroshima.
Aha. That's very interesting. Isn't that the team that, you know, like, they've lost their best players
In
recent years?
Yeah.
Like Kashiwagi, Makino, and Lee Tadanari?
Yeah.
And they have basically a rookie as a...
As a manager. Yeah, well, they lost Petrovic to Urawa, of course. We'll come on to them later. But in the absence of...
Petrovic is rallying 3 points behind, actually.
Yeah, in the absence of Tadanari Lee, as you say, who's gone to Southampton, Hisato Sato has 10 league goals already in 13 games. He's in double figures for the ninth consecutive season. He only managed 11 in total last year. So he's been on fire. They're a good side to watch, don't they?
They are, but they're going to struggle once it gets... Every year they start really well.
Mm-hmm.
And every year they talk about, this is the year we have a chance, we can go for it. I think the way they play, the same as Urawa now with Petrovic, is obviously taking the same style.
Yeah.
You use a hell of a lot of energy. And once it gets a bit warmer,
yeah,
becomes a lot more difficult to do that. At the start of the season, maybe when everyone's a bit fresher, there isn't so much of a break in Japan because there's just constantly football here. But at the start of the season, of course, everyone is a bit fresher, a bit more keen to go. You've got that clean slate. I think they're going to... I'd really like them to, and they're a great team to watch, and they've still got some very good players. But I don't know if they're going to be able to, at the end of the summer, once we get to the end of August, a couple more months, 2 or 3 months down the line, are they still going to be in the top four? I don't know. If they get a couple of injuries, perhaps not.
Okay, if not them, then who?
But, you know, if I was their coach, you know, like, it's speaking in a very... from a very Italian perspective, my strategy would be, okay, they don't play the ACL.
Yeah.
They don't give many players to the national teams.
No.
Drop out and then Nabisco, play the youth team in Nabisco, okay, and then really focus on every single game. And essentially, I think what Sean said is very correct about injuries. Make sure that the whole team is as healthy as you can through the season.
Focus
and,
you know,
maybe they can win the title, but, you know, they can... you know, finish top four, top five.
Well, if they don't win the title, then who else? Immediately below them, you've now got the two Shizuoka clubs, Jubilo Iwata and Shimizu S-Pulse. And then below them, Urawa Reds, who's, of course, managed by the former San Francisco manager, Petrovic.
Well, me and Sean were so damn sure that Grampus was going to sweep it.
We'll get on to Urawa, to Nagoya later, but who's impressed you so far?
Jubilo. Yeah, they're third.
Yeah.
And again, you know, they're a club that they always say, oh, Yamaha is not, you know, syringing money into it, you know, like, they, you know, they don't have, like, a fantastic stadium, you know, like, they're a bit of, of a, you know, like, compared to Espulse, they're a bit like, you know, like a poorer sister, you know, like, or do you say ugly sister?
Mm.
Yeah. And still, you know, like, and as Maeda is getting old, you know, like, Komano is getting old, and Kawaguchi is so old that he's injured.
Very old, yeah.
And, and then they're up there, third.
But they've got a lot of good young players coming through.
Okay, that's one thing that I think you really want to... And the interesting thing for me, okay, now that I see things from, you know, from far away, you know, like you maybe see things that I wouldn't have seen if I would have been here, is the comparison between them and Omi Ardija. Or Vissel Kobe, whichever one, okay? So those two, I mean, Ardija and Vissel are two clubs who have been investing money. In a way, maybe they just, you know, some of their investment has been also very reasonable. I mean, they got good players, solid J-leaguers, you know, like they got, you know, maybe a good Korean player, okay. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, if I look at the table now, they are 14th, let's say 15th, Ardija.
Yeah.
Jubilo haven't got anything like that, but it seems like when they get a foreign player, it's always a quality player. When they get a high school player or a university player.
And he seems to fit in the team.
Yeah. Yeah,
very
so
quickly.
I don't know the exact situation there, but it seems to me that they are fantastic scouts.
Mm.
And it's interesting to see that in the J-Leagues today, having fantastic scouts is probably even better than having a lot of money and just like buying, you know, famous players.
Sure.
This is very interesting because, you know, like we're going to see a similar situation in Europe pretty soon with the financial fair play that actually kicks in. And it seems that, you know, like, you know, I don't know, maybe some Jubilo scouts are going to get hired by European clubs.
Well, they could. Well, then just below them, almost equal on points, I think, Shimizu S-Pulse, their local rivals. They have gone down the route a number of times of signing famous players. They had Freddie Ljungberg briefly last season. They've still got Shinji Ono and Naohiro Takahara. Have you seen much of them this season, Sean?
I have, yeah. They're decent. They just seem to lack, like, a kind of a spark. I think Jubilo kind of maybe have that. Players like Yamada, you can see them playing
good
and they're not doing much, but suddenly he'll make something. with Shimizu, I saw them lose 1-0 to Reds recently, and they did get a player sent off ridiculously for nothing.
Very, very soft yellow cards for Alex Brosca. Yeah.
Alex, yeah. But they just, they never really look like, Reds were very well organised. They have this 3-4-3, but really it's kind of like a 5 defence.
Well, it certainly, certainly wasn't that game.
They
just kind of
sit back. I read this excellent column on it, a blackboard.
Oh, really?
I think it was on goal.com.
Oh, you have to show me that.
Yeah, I wonder if you'd like it. I think you'd like it.
Oh, excellent.
But they did. They sat back, and it just never looked like Shimizu were going to score. Even from sometimes with teams, like if they get a free kick or a mate, it was just like they have nothing that can. They've got good young players, but they seem to do well when the team is playing well. Mm. And if they win a game, they win by three or four goals and really enjoy it. I think they still need somebody to spark it off, and maybe they were hoping Ljungberg would bring that with his experience, and not necessarily the speed or the, but he would pick out the passes. And then
it was a strange one, wasn't it? Because I mean, they gave him the shirt number 9, I think, for the start of the season. Mm. He was very much in the squad and part of the plans.
It was bizarre. I don't know what.
I think he bought an apartment, right?
He did. I interviewed him last. I think it was October.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how much he wanted to come here, and it wasn't just about money. He had offers for far more money in the Middle East and stuff. But he wanted to come here, and he came for the World Cup in 2002 and loved the country, so he wanted to live here for a bit.
Sure.
And I don't think he was trying to be. I think he was genuine. He genuinely did. Like, you can tell sometimes a player is giving you
the what
they want you to hear. And it seemed genuine. And yeah, he just got a house. I spoke to him after the Kashiwa Reysol game, towards the end of last season. Second or third last game.
Yeah.
And he said to me, "Yeah, we've just got a house. He's been staying in a hotel, so we're happy we can finally." And then, he was gone, sort of seemingly out of nowhere. It was suddenly announced they were cancelling the contract, and I assumed at the time that was because perhaps an offer had come from a Premier League club in the window.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get the paperwork done in time, which would have meant waiting till the summer.
Yeah.
So that he had then said to the club, "I really want to go, but I have the contract, so I can't." So they kind of come to some kind of gentleman's agreement, as Japanese clubs do far too often, and say, "Oh, okay, we'll help you out." Yeah. But as far as I know, he's still unattached. No. It seems very odd. So,
You talk about a gentleman agreement, which it's very possible. Don't forget that Shimizu's parts are the guys who really stamped on their feet when Okazaki was, you know, going for free to Stuttgart. They were the first Japanese club who say, "No, we don't like this. At least we need to discuss this." They make a big fuss out of it. Mm. This story with Ljungberg, it reminded me a bit, and I'm giving away my age now, but it's of when Mickey Laudrup came to visit Kobe.
Yeah.
He came with a lot of enthusiasm. I remember this interview with him, you know, like...
he came when they were still in the JFL in what was then the second tier, right?
And after a few months, he was so disappointed. So one thing that I wonder is this, you know, in a way, if you think about it, like the Scandinavian, society is one of the most open-minded and, you know, like, quote-unquote, modern.
Yeah.
And Japan is still a very conservative country. Sure. I wonder if there's something that, you know, like, it sort of clicked there and, you know, like, and the image of Japan you have from outside and actually living here, you know, like, it's different. And in the end, you realize it's not worth it. Because it's a very similar story. One is Danish, one is Swedish.
Yeah.
And they came with a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, as you said, I'm sure Ladder was really genuine. He talked about helping Japanese football to grow and everything. And when he quit, he was very bitter.
Yeah.
Very, very bitter. You know,
maybe they got sent on the J-League course.
No, I'm sure that it's something like... I mean, it could be something that, you know, in the end, understanding that, after all, like, a Japanese football club is still a kaisha, a company, and there are rules, expectations, and things, you know, it's something that for somebody who's used to a more free lifestyle, might become disturbing, and then maybe other things come together, you know, like, they have families, you know, like...
Sure.
Well, it didn't work, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It didn't work out, which is a bit of a shame, because Ljungberg is the only, like, sort of big name we got in Japan in the last, I don't know how many years.
Yeah, so. it's been, to be fair, a long time since Ljungberg was a star player in Europe now, greatest player as he was for Arsenal maybe 10 years back. But you mentioned...
It did work, kind of, because Shimizu are now in the top four. Well, maybe it gave the other players... Okay, he's not still there, he's not... But maybe that brief... impact has kind of given the players a sense of, hang on, we're a club that should be
like this coach is obviously trying to get us to a different level. He's trying to bring in, I mean, Jong Appian has played, I think, for the Dutch Olympic team.
Yeah.
And normally Japanese players are used to Brazilian guys rocking up for 6 months and then going to the Middle East or being rubbish and quietly being shown out the back door. So maybe the younger players like Takagi and Omae that are suddenly starting to show more, maybe having that influence, albeit temporarily, has given them a sense of, okay, we need to be aiming a level higher than maybe we kind of thought. Maybe they were playing for, hopefully I can get a move overseas at some point.
Well, one thing I can say for sure, I mean, I haven't even watched the J League for many years, you know, like, it's clear that some of the foreign players and coaches who came over did a lot for Japanese football.
Sure.
The first name that comes up to my mind is Dunga. Dunga is the first guy who just told the Japanese, if you play football, you're going to be a badass. And can you say yes on this part?
Yeah.
A badass.
You said it twice, three times.
Yeah.
So, and you know, like, and I think that especially now that, you know, like the top, you know, the top quality Japanese players are leaving, you know, to Europe. It'd be, you know, like bringing here experienced players, not every experienced, but experienced player like Yumberi or, you know, like my dream would be, of course, Alessandro Del Piero coming to Japan. It still has a value. It's still there, you know, for the young players here, you know, like there's still a certain level of naivety that, and they can definitely use the help of like a guy who's, you know, who's been around, who played in different leagues, who won titles,
yeah,
and could teach them one thing or two about football.
Mm. Urawa Reds, who played Shimizu the other week, they've basically gone from a team who nearly got relegated this season to a team who are challenging in the top five at the moment anyway. Petrovic seems to be building a team from the back, as we say. A team that's gone in quite the opposite direction is Gamba Osaka. Third place last season, only 2 points off the eventual champions, Kashiwa. Now third from bottom with only 9 points from 13 games. Cut adrift, what, 5 points? 6 points adrift of safety.
There's 6 points adrift of safety, but safety is currently marked by... Is it Kashiwa Reysol?
Kashiwa, there, no, it was.
Okay, it's Omiya, Ardija and Vissa who never go down. They always finish between 12 and 15, but never go down.
Either way, they've got 3 weeks to ponder upon a league table, which shows that they're 6 points adrift of safety, having not managed double figures in terms of points.
I'm looking at this. This is very bad. There's Omiya, Ardija and Vissa who never go down. Same as, well, Sirius, they did go down one time, but in the latest year, they've been over there. And then the other team above them are Nagoya Grampus, Kashiwa Reysol and Yokohama Marinos, which are very unlikely to be relegated.
Well, I made this point in my column a few weeks ago, that Urawa were eventually saved last season by the fact that there were three pretty terrible teams. Corfu maybe weren't terrible, but they were always the candidates.
They were terrible. If they hadn't had Mike, they'd have gone down bottom.
Okay, well, there was always three teams that you thought, well, it doesn't matter how bad Urawa are, they might still stay up. Whereas this season, you've got two teams down at the bottom, Niigata and Sapporo, who you think, okay, maybe they're going down. But there's not a third. Gamba are going to have to get better of their own accord. And
I think, you know, they planned for Sagan Tosu to go down, but that went terribly wrong.
Yeah, well, it went terribly wrong the other day when we were there, and Gamba 2-0 up with, what, 25 minutes to go, and Tosu scored three times in the last 25 minutes, twice in the last 4 minutes, once in the last second.
I was on a subway in Singapore, actually, and I checked in the scores, and I said, oh, 2-0, oh, finally, at least they're winning this game, something's turning around. And then in, like, about an hour later, I just, like, said, oh, yeah, I gotta check how did the game end, you know, and I turned it on, it was 2-3.
Yeah.
And I thought somebody hacked the website, and you know, it was a joke.
It was
I'm so unbelievable.
This is the same thing. When Gamba scored the second goal, they'd been pretty much dominant.
It was undoubtedly their best performance of the season.
Because the players were saying afterwards,
yeah,
they were kind of. Right. But I think this happens a lot in Japan. Japanese players are hugely affected by things. If they're winning 2 or 3-0,
they
can go on like Kashima did and win 7-0. They become so confident, then they don't lose for 5 games, and they think they're the best players in the world. But with Gamba, and the coach said it afterwards, I spoke to Endo afterwards, he said the same thing. He said, Tosu scored so quickly after we got our second goal. And that just seemed to throw the
Gamba fans
hadn't panic.
Stopped celebrating.
No,
maybe the players hadn't, I don't
almost
know.
They couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Oh, we're doing it.
We're doing it. The Gamba, Moto,
and then
and they're still doing it, and the goal went in, and no one had realised. Like, oh.
So you're celebrating the Tosu goal as
right.
well. But that shouldn't, of course it affects players all around the world, that the second it goes in, but you quickly regroup and go, we're still winning, we have to write less,
but
consolidate.
It changed the flow.
Tosu suddenly had the confidence to go for it. Gamba are suddenly thinking,
hang on, we thought we had this sort of sewn up, and you, if you're 2-0 up, I don't care who you're playing against, you need to an extent, kind of curb your attacking and go, okay, we're 2-0 up, now let's just play it, keep the ball a bit. And, but
it wasn't an isolated incident, though. I mean, Gamba is just not used to winning anymore. It's been, they've played in the ACLs, there, a game short, but they've only won 2 out of 12, drawn 3, lost 7. I mean, they've scored 15, which is for a team down the bottom is one of the better ones, but they've conceded 25. The defence is appalling. They started the season, of course, as we spoke a couple of months ago after the Osaka derby. They had the Brazilian manager, Sirao, in charge, who was...
Bring him back!
Well, they finally got rid of him after he was in charge.
He was
five,
consistent, 100% record.
100% record, 5 matches, 5 defeats. They got rid of him, they brought in Matsunami from the coaching staff, who's like a legend, a former striker with the club. And the performances have got slightly better, but it's still a shocking difference from last season.
Here's my point. It wasn't like the last year's third place a miracle, maybe.
Yeah, it's a little.
Because, you know, I've seen Gamba in the stadium watching the game maybe a dozen times, not 15 last year. And I never really understood which sort of football they were playing.
No, but they knew how to win, though. They certainly didn't. Kashiwa and Nagoya, who came second, they certainly did look like champion material, and Gamba, I agree, didn't. But they still had this knack of winning, and they seem to have lost it completely. Everything is now wrong. The strike force isn't firing. They've lost Lee Kunho, who was superb Korean striker. He was probably the most complete forward possibly the Gamba have ever had. He's gone, and now suddenly the departure of Takashi Usami, in my opinion, has now become evident, because there's no one creating the chances either. Rafinha needed an intelligent partner. Now they signed Paulinho, who does exactly the same job, and Korean guy Sungyul, who hasn't done anything, and Sator from J2, who's been the best of a bad bunch. In midfield, Endo's getting older.
What about the defence and the goalkeeper?
This is the thing. This has been problems that have been coming for 2-3 years. Gamba's defence has never been very good.
Okay.
And Gamba's midfield has always been aging.
Here's my question. The Gamba supporters have been really criticising the administration, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have they been criticising the goalkeepers and the defenders as well?
Everyone knows the goalkeepers, with all due respect, are not very good. But if you're not a very good goalkeeper, but you're given the chance to play for a good J-League team, are you going to say, no, sorry, you should give it to somebody else? Of course you don't. You're picked by the team you played. But the way the fans look at it, it's like, we want to sign a better goalkeeper, we want to sign a better defender, we need to gradually replace the old players in the midfield.
Because all of them.
Well.
Because they're all old.
Well, they were all about the same age. Hashimoto, who's now left. Endo, who's still there and is still good, but he's got injury problems. He's not quite as effective as he maybe once was. He can't be expected to lead everything. But this is something that's always been happening.
You got 3 more old ones, right?
Yeah.
You got Myojin, you got Tagawa, and Kaji is not a midfielder, but he's still a good player.
These are problems that have been on the cards for so long, and suddenly in the winter break, Hashimoto was gone, and Yamaguchi from
the
defence was gone.
Besides Endo.
Yeah, I agree. But the guys they brought in to replace were people they sent out on loan 2-3 years ago because they weren't good enough.
And is it okay to say that these guys who stayed are probably getting some of the highest salaries in the J-League?
It seems.
I say so.
It seems a bit of
some like management issues there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shambles that's been going on for a while.
So this is my question: Do you think we're getting to a point where, like, the supporters, like I'm thinking about the Gamba supporters, but it could be also the Albirex supporters, are beginning to demand a certain, level of, professionalism from the.
Well, I think so. I think they look, in Gamba's case, I mean, I chatted to Kanamoni at length quite recently, and he's basically, as all Gamba presidents in the past, he's been parachuted in from the parent company, Panasonic. And
What's his football experience?
No. Essentially, he's a career man. He worked until the age of 60 with Panasonic. He has done, in my opinion, a very good job at Gamba in terms of establishing roots in the community, is making a better supporter experience, pushing the new stadium, which is now going ahead. That's all well and good, but
sorry, so Sean, can you think of like any club in Europe where like a guy who absolutely has no football experience and no, maybe
Berlusconi?
Berlusconi has been AC Milan's coach in their best years, right?
Yeah, and in Italy it's a little bit different, because even if you have no career experience, it's so much part of the culture. Okay, whereas when Kanamori was growing up, this certainly wasn't the case.
But do you need to know about football?
the players don't know about the business side. If you're the
no, but if you're hiring and firing managers and hiring and firing technical directors who are signing the players,
and keeping a goalkeeper, it's just like you
the
know.
General manager, the president doesn't hire the manager. He puts the final hand on and says, okay, they should have a technical director. They should have people in charge of that side of it. So I don't think it's particularly his fault. No, maybe he should be hiring people beneath him, between him and the manager.
Yeah.
Maybe it should be the front office staff that are in charge of that. That maybe that's the problem. And you've spoken about this before. Ex-players maybe should be working in the clubs.
Absolutely.
To bring that in. I think the top guy, I mean, the one that obviously I know most about being a United fan, someone like David Gill, how much he actually knows about the game, how much he ever played football or watched football, I don't know. But he knows
probably
his
more
job.
Than probably some of the guys more. Here in Japan. I mean, here's the point. I mean, like, let's say a great, you know, like a people's person, you know, like, but that, well, that's because of that should be on top of like a nuclear engineering, you know, facility. I don't know anything about nuclear engineering. I think that if I worked there, I should at least have some sort of heritage, especially, you know, like, football is such an important thing for the people, and it's such, in a way, a complicated game. It's a game that you can relearn. You need to absorb it. So I'm wondering, just like, you know, if you look at the Japanese clubs, which are, of course, all owned by, like, big companies, okay, how many of these people who are, you know, presidents or in the fronto, which is the administration, how many of them know something about football? And it you know, it breaks my heart then when I see, like, people like, you know, Akita or Nanami, who are on, you know, doing, you know, TV shows, some of them are very interesting, and, you know, people like Nakata who's doing exhibitions games. These are the guys who are playing in World Cups, playing in Europe and everything, and they should be the ones, okay, who are in the clubs and who talk to the young players and who tell to the president, oh, these Brazilian guys here in Japan just to mess around, okay, don't sign him. Oh, these sort of things, the things that that only somebody who's been, you know, breathing football throughout their life, in a way or another, as a player, coach, amateur, supporter.
The one thing I think is the way that I think it does come in, is I always feel kind of like the Japanese clubs don't see their supporters as supporters, they see them as customers. So after the Tosu game, Kanamori comes out to speak to the fans, and in Japanese culture, if you give bad service in a restaurant, in a shop, the top guy comes out, he bows to you a lot, and he says, so we're really, really sorry, we're so sorry about the service, we're really sorry.
We're going to work hard, you know.
And then the customers then feel like, well, now, like, I'm superior, now you've bowed down, you've apologised to me, I'm still not happy what happened, but I appreciate you've come out and faced up to it, okay, next time.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with fans, it's not about giving them a free player card when they come in, and something, you know, nice service, and, like, you know, different types of food, and family days for the kids, and it essentially comes down to, that stuff is great and you need that to a point, but it essentially comes down to what happens on the pitch. And there's a couple of clubs that I know the kind of, you said, the staff quite well, and I've spent time with them almost like in their day-to-day working at the clubs, and you see the amount of effort that goes in the whole time, and essentially it all comes down to nothing if the team doesn't get a result.
Sure.
And that's something that I think maybe they don't quite get here. If you're dropped in from Panasonic or Hitachi or Mitsubishi, wherever, you just think of it as, well, if they lose the game, we just say sorry, we bow a lot, and they'll be okay, they'll come back. And I think, there is that nuance within football where it's not just a case of that. Sometimes saying sorry isn't enough. You need to show it. And maybe, the fans are starting to cotton on to the fact that, hang on, this isn't like anything else. This isn't like, you know, food or something else. This is...
Taking out what you say, which I agree with, you know, like you mentioned, just like the working hard thing, okay, this gambaru thing, okay, this football is, you know, it's a part of it. This gambaru is beautiful, you know, it's the sportsmanship and everything. But then, you know, like when you're winning 3-2 at home and then it's 3-2, I mean, as a supporter, screw that, okay. I mean, I don't care if you work very hard in during the week. You just like sort of get humiliated at home by that team that's been literally promoted, who has a budget which is like probably 20% of what do we have. So that is the point. And if you go back and look at the pattern of some clubs, and you know, it could be Reds until last year, it could be Gamba now, it could have been, you know, clubs like Kyoto Sanga, Jeff United, you know, there are a lot of incompetent people still around. This is a matter of fact. And my main point is the thing that until this management part doesn't change, you know, it's been very hard for Japan to make the next step, especially in a period where the best players are going abroad and there's not enough capital to bring in good players.
Yeah, well, on that admittedly positive note, I think we're going to have to wrap things up for today. Guys, it's been a pleasure to speak to you once again. Cheers. How long are you around in Japan for now?
I'm going to be here for a week. I got a gig on WoW next week, and we'll catch a couple of games, maybe.
Yeah. You go to the World Cup qualifiers?
Maybe, if I get a ticket. I don't really fancy going there, working there. I mean, I've been to so many games the last 2 years.
Fair enough. Sean, you'll be there.
I'll be there.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Working. I can't take it.
I'd rather watch it in a pub with some nice girls.
Fair enough.
Well,
of course.
And you can't possibly argue with that. That is a positive note to end on, so I think we should finish it.
Thanks. I want to finish on a happy note.
That's a much better note to finish on.
We didn't talk about AKB48.
We haven't talked about AKB48, and we're not going to. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Right, that's all from us for now. You can find links to Sean's, Cesare's and my Twitter pages on the Minutecast website. That's minutecast.footballjapan.jp. And I'll be here again alone next week to look back on Japan's World Cup qualifiers against Oman and Jordan. Bye for now.
Actually, I've got a point to make about your ex as well. You told me you weren't so obsessed with her.
Yeah.
And then there were pictures going up on Facebook.
There was one.
With nostalgic reminiscences.
It wasn't nostalgic.
And I noticed on Twitter as well, she only follows one and is followed by one.
Yeah, that's because...
This is a bit Gollum.
It's true.
It's a bit precious.
This was because she went to work yesterday and she forgot her keytite and she was trying to find... She's not on Facebook, so she tried to find me on Google Plus and I'm not on that.
Wait, are you talking about your ex-girlfriend?
Yeah, who I saw
yesterday. You went and checked how many friends she had, didn't you? Because on Twitter, he put a good evening with this person.
I was a little bit drunk.
So I just went, oh, who's this person? So I clicked.
And he wasn't even drunk. That's a bit sinister, man.
He wasn't there.
Hang on, I'm being called sinister. Like, this is unbelievable.
I'm open-minded.
No, if someone you know tweets they've been out with, like, I know Ben's up in Tokyo, he says to me, I was some friends, and I was like, I wonder who this person is. Because
yeah.
It was his ex, so I click.
Yeah.
And it just comes up. You see their stats, like, tweets, followers, and it was just 1-1. Yeah. One, one. I was like,
yeah.
The only other person I know has one who follows one person is Alan Partridge, who follows Shakira. Yeah. So I was like, maybe this is some kind of joke thing, and Ben's been out with like, no, the Japanese Alan Partridge.
No, she, no.